All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
Welcome back, welcome back. Taxation is theft. I feel like I need to say that an extra time today. Michael, welcome. How's it going?
What's going on, Dan? How are you today, brother?
Doing pretty good. That's an awesome shirt you got there.
Thank you very much.
Says something very important that everybody needs to hear.
Absolutely.
I want to ask, because I mean, I get asked this question all the time, like, especially when I'm wearing my big yellow hat around. Do people stop you? What do they say? Do they agree? Do they disagree? What happens? How does that? I want to ask you that conversation. Do you wear this shirt out anywhere?
I wear this shirt all the time. I wear it. I have a sweatshirt. It's the same thing. I got a big hoodie I wear in the winter. I got this that I wear in the summer. I get a lot of, hey man, I like your shirt. You know, hey, nice shirt. And otherwise, you know, it's New Jersey's weird, man. Like even though everyone gets like the this assumption that there's a bunch of jerks in Jersey, nobody really says anything too negative. You know, I get a lot of compliments on it. But for the most part.
Complimenting you on that shirt is really saying something negative about the government, so there's that.
Yeah, no, I always take it as a positive, you know? I go, hell yeah, man, not a problem, anytime. It's, you know, let me know if you want one, I'll get you one, you know, and then that's the end of it. But it hasn't sparked the conversation I thought it would have sparked the first time I started wearing it, that's for sure. It's odd,
you know? You got to get some, let's talk about this. You're running for office, so you should have, like, your swag. Like, I had these don't tell me I don't have one up here. Here he goes. I had these, like, in my jacket pocket, and yes. Like it's like a trifold with like all kinds of taxation and theft stuff. Oh shit, the last ones I ordered, they put stickers on them, so they're like taped shut. But it's like a trifold with like all kinds of cool stuff on it. And so, yeah. Like, when anybody would come up to me and say, hey, even if I was wearing this hat, hey, I like your hat, I would just be like, well, here you go. And just give them stuff, or sometimes I give them stickers or wristbands or something, and they were just like, wow, that's so cool. Right. Yeah, you got to do that, man.
We're working on it right now. The primary focus is getting on the ballot. New Jersey, we're fortunate. I only need 100 signatures of in-district voters. So it's not too terribly difficult. As a matter of fact, I believe the team actually did it this week in a matter of like 3 days. Awesome. It wasn't too hard. Yeah, we went to a couple of rallies. A couple of people hit up their friends. I'm real lucky. I've spent the last 2 years building my team since my last run in 2018. And I've got about 12 really strong people who are willing to put in some hours and effort for me. So I'm hoping to have literature and things like that to carry around with me everywhere very soon. Once we're officially on the ballot, then the team's going to transition to focusing on that and then door knocking.
Awesome. Well, if you need some help with that, I mentioned before the show, like, you know, we're definitely working on that with other candidates with the SWAT team, because we want to make sure that, we started creating some infographics the other day, and like the next thing you know, it's like, holy shit, we have like, we're going to end up with like 20 or 30 pages of infographics that like we can give to different candidates. Like, oh, what issue are you focused on? Oh, criminal justice reform, here, take it. And just like, give awesome. Everybody the stuff that they have, because, like, you know, this is something the Libertarian Party should have and they don't. Okay, let's fill that void. So what made you, what got you interested in wanting to run in the first place?
So in 2016, I guess a lot of people got ignited and inspired because of everything that would happen with Trump and with Hillary and all of the nine. So I went, it was May. And it was right after Trump said he's going to grab her by the, and I threw my hands up in the air. I was like, I'm done with the Republicans. At that point, I was still a holdout from Ron Paul and the Republicans. You know, I was still trying to hope for another Ron Paul-esque. The only candidate that year that I had heard talk about the national debt was John Kasich. So funny little story. I'm sitting, I had what I thought were chest pains, and it turns out it was more of a muscle spasm in my back that was just bothering my chest. It was weird. Maybe like a nerve thing, right up in my neck here. And but I'm in the hospital. I'm sitting there in a hospital bed, and I see the national clock come up on TV on one of them, you know, those local news channels, and it's John Kasich talking. I'm like, all right, cool, I'll follow this guy. Then he plummets. Trump does his thing. I was like, I don't know what to do. I can't vote for Trump. I just can't do it. I'm not voting for this man. It's not going to happen. What's going on with the Libertarian Party? I got to look them up. What are they doing? And then you had Gary Johnson. I was like, oh, all right, Gary Johnson ran in 2012. He's not bad. He's okay. Then there was Bill Weld. I was like, why did he do this Bill Weld guy? And I was like, all right, whatever. So I followed it. And that a few days after the convention, I went on to the New Jersey Libertarian Party website. I found that. Became a member, went onto the national site, became a member. At 1 o'clock in the morning, the New Jersey State Chair sends me an email. Me and him had a conversation, an email for an hour and a half. And right there in that moment, I was like, I'm getting involved. This guy cares.
Nice.
The guys that are involved locally actually care. Dude's having a conversation with me at 1:30 in the morning. I go to my first meeting, start going to a couple more meetings. I volunteer on Pete Roerman's campaign for governor in 2017. And in 2018, I said, you know what, guys? I want to run for Congress. You know? And they all said, well, why Congress? And I said, well, honestly, the most oppressive part of the government that we deal with today is the federal government. They're the ones that have people from 3,000 miles away telling me what I can and can't do with my life. My local government's easy to deal with. I just go to the town hall meetings and start, you know, talking to people, and we can have an effect on it. But the federal government's the one that's oppressing us the most, and the one that's intruding on our local lives the most by their outside influences. So I want to be in Congress. I want to run for Congress and spread that message that we should be localizing community.
You know, I was just about to correct you and say, but DC's not 3,000 miles away from you. But then I realized that doesn't matter, because you still have Californians who are sending their representatives, and right. you've got the federal district courts in California. So they're like, even though you're right next to DC almost, still have a tremendous amount of influence coming from people like on the other side of the country. That's insane.
Yeah. Think of Honolulu or Hawaii. You know, they sent Tulsi Gabbard in, and she's given her opinion from 5,000 miles away.
Yeah. Like,
and these people, they're proposing bills for things that need to happen across the entire nation. And they're using their perspective from what they see in their local community to tell me what needs to happen here in New Jersey. And I'm like, well, the socioeconomic dynamic in New Jersey is nothing compared to California or Hawaii or Arkansas or Wyoming. Why are you telling me what I can and can't do at the Jersey Shore? Maybe we should be making the decisions on how to protect the Jersey Shore.
And like, what's really interesting about that is you would think, I mean, like, when you're talking about, like, Medicare for All, right? This is a huge program. It's going to be super expensive. It's never been done before the way that they want to do it. And yet, nobody says, like, yeah, why don't we try it in this city first and see if it works? It's like, no, the entire world must have this plan, right? Because, of course...
Why don't we have, like, a little sample? Why don't we take, like, an 8 million person sample in New York City, see how it works, and then try it with 385 million? Maybe it's a little bit of a trial case. You know, the FDA does trial cases on everything for 20 years before they release it. We can't do a trial case for 2 years on whether or not it works somewhere else. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane, man. So what do you think about what's going on right now? Are you seeing any protests or anything in your area?
Jersey's been real peaceful. So we've had plenty of protests. I actually went to a BLM protest here in Jackson, New Jersey, which shocked everybody that we had one. For those that don't know, Jackson, New Jersey is literally like right smack in the middle of New Jersey. We have Six Flags Great Adventure, and that's all we're known for. But we're also known for a bunch of people that are of, you know, a little bit of a backward mindset, but that's the stereotype. You know what I mean? We're the sticks of New Jersey. We're not the city. We're not the suburbs. Although now we're more suburbs than we've ever been. So it was nice to see that we went to this protest. Dude, there was like 2,000 people there, and it was a lot of people from all different generations, people from, you know, different races and everything. And it was pretty neat. It was beautiful to see all the people standing up and talking. The march was, we had a really nice, peaceful march. Everyone was cool. There was no violence or anything. And that's been the case in New Jersey for the most part. Even Camden and Newark and some of the more urban areas, you know, the cops and the protesters marched arm in arm in Camden and Newark. It's been fairly peaceful. We haven't had any violence really that I know of that's noteworthy. So it's, for us, it's different than it's been in other places.
So this is kind of interesting because you have, I mean, it sounds like you're talking about speakers and everything. Like, was this something that was organized, or was this like something that was kind of spontaneous and a bunch of people just showed up?
No, they've all been organized. They've all been organized. Now, organized in the sense that organized in a matter of days. We're not talking like somebody planned, you know. I've held events, and I've had people come out, and I've had speakers come out, and I've hosted people, and it takes time to put together a good event. But obviously, when something is this has this hard in the heartstrings and is this important to liberty and freedom for everybody, people came, and they came quick. I think I found out, I think they organized it in a matter of like less than a week. And they had a bunch of local clergymen. They had a couple local teachers from the community, from the high school in the area. It was impressive. The young men who put it together did a phenomenal job. They spoke a great message, a peaceful message, you know, a frustrated message as it should have been, but it was peaceful, and it was all about harmony and loving your neighbor basically. And it was a beautiful thing to watch.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's always good to hear that kind of stuff. Cause that's something that, isn't that weird how like that's almost like in normal conversations, a lot of the times that's kind of like socially faux pas or just cause it's like, oh yeah, you're weak. What's a grown man over here talking about loving their neighbor? Like, it's weird. It's I guess part of the macho culture and like part of the cool culture. I know, like, especially when you're younger and like kids are always trying to like show off and, you know, all this other stuff, it's weird. But then for some reason, when you put it together in a community like that, especially when they're speaking out against something that like everybody's just absolutely upset with, that like it kind of becomes acceptable at that point. But it's like, that really should just be the norm.
Exactly. And that's, man, I try so hard to tell people like that is basically the core tenet of libertarianism, and they miss out on it because of all the outside static and the outside influence that tells them otherwise. I'm like, now you really don't understand. Like, everybody I know that's involved, we just want to love our neighbors and get along. That's all we want to do, and I just don't want anybody else to harass the hell out of me.
Awesome. So, do you have any big plans, like a platform or like anything specifically that you're interested in changing?
Well, what I want to do is I want to truly get a true libertarian styled person in Congress in New Jersey. So New Jersey is almost as left as California, New York, New Jersey, you know, and when it comes to socialism, we'll say, just for simplicity reasons. But, you know, the guy that I'm running against, he's been in the seat for 38 years. This is his 40th year. Okay. And he's a rhino. He's a Republican in name only. He just got an award for being the most bipartisan congressperson. He's been there since 1980. You know, and when I hear that he gets the most bipartisan congressperson award, I think, great, you're the best at screwing everybody.
Right.
You know, that's what that means. That means you're the best at hurting all of us. So, you know, he ran as a Democrat in 78 and lost, came back, ran as a Republican in 80 and then won. And he's been there ever since. And he wins with 55 to 58% of the vote. It's a super safe seat. They threw everything they had at him in 2018, and he still got 55% of the vote. And the Democrat only got 43% of the vote. It was an 8-person race in my – it was the most competed seat in the state, if that gives you any idea. It actually inspired six people to run an independent campaign, including myself. If you want to count the Libertarian Party as independent, it was six people versus the two megaliths. And it was crazy to say the least, because when we went to the League of Women's Voters debate, there was actually four of us up on the stage and the Republican was nowhere to be found. So my goal is to really get a truly, I don't want to say conservative voice, but a constitutional voice. You know what I mean? To say the very least. Now, I'm a little bit more extreme than with reducing the government than from the constitutional standpoint. But at the very least, we need somebody who's going to say, no, the Fourth Amendment exists. And get rid of the NSA. We don't need them. You know, we got someone who turns around and says, listen, yeah, we got to make sure that we actually give people due process. And we can't just go shooting people in the streets because we're mad at them. It doesn't work that way. Like, you got to give them a trial of their peers, that whole thing. So it's not something that we have right now. And right now, you got Chris Smith hiding. Like, he's not talking about the police brutality. He's not talking about the qualified immunity efforts, the ending the qualified immunity efforts from Justin Amash. He's still talking about China, and he's more worried about the protesters in Hong Kong than he is about the protesters in the streets of his own country. You know, so it's, I just want somebody who cares, and I want to bring that compassion, and I want to bring localization back to Congress.
I wonder if he's like tied in with the police unions.
I'm sure he is. He's probably tied in with all the unions. Like I said, he gets that bipartisan award every year. So, I mean, everybody likes him.
You know what's weird? I was, because you talk about constitutionality. I was reading, I went back and read the Constitution again a couple nights ago with the frame of like what authority do they have to have criminal charges and federal prisons, right? Because like you hear about like even when JFK was shot, right, there was this big dispute over the federal government had no jurisdiction to do the investigation. That was not a federal crime. It was a murder that happened in the state of Texas. And so the state of Texas had jurisdiction over that. And I started reading through it, and like, it's interesting that you see some of this stuff in there and you're just like, wow, that's total bullshit. That needs to go. But you also see stuff in there where it's like, this is like very limited, and they've taken this and used it to like do so much with it. So when I was looking for like federal crimes, what do they have the capacity to charge somebody with? And it was like for treason, which is a crime against the state, which if you're smoking weed, that's not a crime against the state. So how can you be charged federally with that? And then the other one was like piracy on the high seas, which is like, okay, maybe if you're smuggling it in from another country, but that's not really piracy because you're not stealing it from somebody. It's really weird. But then like you look at this and you're like, okay, I could see how they could like totally stretch that out of shape and make it fit what's going on today. But that makes absolutely no sense. And it's like, man. That's insane. And like it kind of are you familiar with Larkin Rose at all? He talks a lot about how the Constitution was bullshit because basically I kind of agree, but I kind of disagree, right? Like I agree that like a bunch of guys have a right to sit around and say, hey, we're going to form an organization and here are the rules. But his main point is that no individual has the right to give a power or a right which he does not have to this government that they just created, right?
Yes.
So like the power to tax is in the Constitution, and that's bullshit because like they didn't although if you look at the taxes that are there, they are in a way they're voluntary.
Let me stop you right there. Yeah. If you don't mind. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the government's perception of what taxation is. So okay. We've got Chaz in Seattle right now, right? We have this autonomous zone where somebody's actually trying to do a separate, they're trying to secede 6 blocks of Seattle from the United States government. They in turn started charging taxes to the people that wanted to stay there. And the government of Seattle said, oh no, that's extortion.
That's extortion.
Wait a minute. They're trying to collect money to keep their community running, and it's not voluntary. So it's extortion because you don't like it. So how is it different than what you're doing and to them if they don't like what you're doing? Please explain.
And I posted that exact same, like I had the video clip of, it was like the chief of police saying that.
Yeah.
And it was so hilarious because the way she described it was exactly like, if like, okay, she ended it with, and this is the crime of extortion. Like she could have just as easily said, and this is called taxation, and you show it to anybody else, and they would have been like, yeah, that sounds like taxes. That's normal.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, those people in Chaz are a bit nutty.
Okay? Yeah.
I mean, if you watch them, I've seen a lot of like inside like films. I mean, I saw the one guy, you can't talk to the press. All right, there's a little, something strange is going on in there. I'm not exactly a fan of them. In the idea of what they're doing, I'm like, oh, hey, right on. At least somebody had the balls to try it. You know what I mean? But
yeah, I think there's a lot of issues with it, especially like going down to just the, I kind of want to say the property rights part of it, but a lot of it's in a public park, so that's okay. But the buildings that are within that area were already owned. They already had businesses in them.
And there's a lot of negative. There's way more negative to it than any sense of positive. The only sense of positive I see is, oh, look, somebody had the balls to try. But they're doing it wrong. They're not doing it the right way. They didn't get a community of people inside of a six-block area to all agree, hey, let's do this, and then buy out properties of people that didn't want to be there and respect the property rights of the individuals inside that autonomous zone, give them their fair share back in replacement for what they were taking from them, and then make themselves an autonomous zone. No, they just came in, stole, beat up, bartered, beat up, destroyed, and cared nothing about anybody. They're pretty much acted like the Vikings. You know, they came in like a group of Vikings, they ransacked the town, and this is mine now. And that's not the right way to do it.
And when I was looking at this too, I know this is like the America's become like a powder keg because of But first of all, coronavirus, everybody's like, stay home, don't go to work. And it's like, oh, like normally people would be like, hey, you want to go to the protest? No, I got to work, man. Like, so now everybody's off of work. More people are going to this. But what's really interesting is like, I saw it. It looked like in Chaz, I'm sure it's not everybody, but it looked like a majority were like college students who are kind of that age where it's like, yeah, I could hang out in a park all day. Like, I don't have anything better to do. But it's also interesting that like their purpose, and this is like where the whole thing kind of falls apart, is that like, okay, here's one. They said emergency aid, right? They said like they blocked off some of the streets. I guess the city outside blocked off the streets to prevent cars from going in, but they said they're going to allow emergency vehicles in, like ambulances. Well, is that something that like the people in Chaz didn't think of? Like, yeah, we can provide everything for ourselves, but oh shit. If somebody gets shot, we're going to have to get them to a hospital, and there's no hospital in Chaz. There's no doctors in Chaz.
It wasn't thought out. It was completely knee-jerk. I mean, did you see the one video? I'm sorry we went off on this Chaz tangent. But did you see the one video of the guy who got jumped and had his laptop stolen and stuff stolen out of his car, and he was yelling and screaming at everyone, like, get away from me, get away from me. I just had my stuff stolen, and you guys all just sat around and watched it happen. And it was like, you guys didn't organize anything. You didn't come up. You didn't do this with a plan. Like, what did you expect? Like, there's no laws about property rights. There's none of that.
I think part of like, because let's say for example, okay, let's say this is the ideal libertarian society because there's no government, right? There's a certain aspect that I think a lot of libertarians miss, that we can't just jump to that anyways, because we're already conditioned to live a certain way. And so like, first of all, well, one thing that's really dumb about Chaz is one guy said he had his laptop and everything stolen out of his tent. And it's like, okay, you can't lock the door on your tent, right? It's like, even when you live at home, you lock the door when you leave, and it's not because of the police. Like, you're not worried about the police kicking your door. You're worrying about them kicking your door down and shooting your dog, but you're not worried about the police breaking in and stealing your laptop.
When I go to the mall, if I have something in the car that I don't want people to know is in the car,
you hide it.
And they can't see it, because you know somebody's going to try and take it, because that happens. That's a reality.
Right. And then there's also the conditioning of we're conditioned when there is a problem. Like, if we – so this guy you said, like, he actually saw them taking the stuff. And what was his response to yell at everybody else for not doing so? Why didn't he do something himself? Why was
he got jumped.
Oh, so that's even worse.
Everybody just watched it happen, though. And that's what he was really upset about. I was like, you all just watched it. Nobody even tried to help. I was like, well, that's mad. But that goes right back to your same thing. It's that same conditioning of they're all conditioned to not help because somebody else is supposed to help. The centralized government is supposed to come and help.
What are we going to do?
Who do we call? Who does what? Yeah. No. If we were conditioned to know that, no, somebody else has to step in at this point, then that would have happened. But you're right. They're not conditioned that way because we've been raised in
this bubble. We don't teach self-defense. They're all unarmed because Seattle's a gun-free zone or something, right?
Right.
It's progressive, so it's got to be a gun-free zone. There's like all these problems that like, and like, this is, this is interesting when it comes to, you know, the magic button of if you could press the button and make all government go away today, would you do it? Like, this is why I kind of say, like, that's a trick question, because if you get rid of all the government right now, you're not getting rid of all of its history of conditioning that we all still carry with us. And so you're basically going to, or even Social Security, right? Like, there are people today that if you got rid of government, they depend on Social Security. And yeah, that's a whole screwed up system and we need to get people off of it and out of it, but that's where they are now. And so if you take that away from people, they're just going to be like, oh shit, what do I do now? They're going to be stuck. So there is like, it's like a giant ball of knots and you can't just pull the strings out. You got to like strategically untie everything, I think.
I always talk about it's the onion. There's so many layers to the onion, and they're also kind of codependent on one another for the actual existence of the onion. And if you get down and you can strip it all apart, it's great, right? Everything works out. It looks beautiful. You make one of them cute, cool little blooming onions, right? Whatever it may be. You turn it into whatever you want then once you start peeling all the layers away. But at the end of the day, and that's the other problem, though. Because if we start talking about one topic at a time, Dan, everything else is so codependent because of all of those knots that you said, that even if I do pull away that one thing, well, then it's going to fail completely because all of these other things were dependent on that one thing, or that one thing is so dependent on all these other things. It's like when we talk about open border immigration. Well, you can't have open border immigration if you still have the welfare state. Well, you can't have the welfare state if you don't have a private structure of organizations and charities to take care of people. Right. So it's just a tidal wave of stuff. And that's why sometimes when I say I would hit the button, because I think we would be able to put it together faster than we could slowly pull it apart.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in Chaz, because you might have people that are like, okay, this isn't working. We're going to have to come up with some rules. And then, you know, you have a bunch of people who basically have no understanding of history, right, that are they're going to try to come up with some rules on how to, you know, how to come up with some law enforcement system. And to their credit, that might be interesting, because I think it's always like when you're I'm from a software engineer perspective, right? When you want to create something new, if you have no frame of reference of anything else, you will come up with something completely new, versus if you have a frame of reference of something else that's already been, you're just going to create the same old thing. So maybe this is an interesting experiment that you know, we'll see. We'll see something new and interesting come out of it. I'm sure it's not going to be a perfect, you know, they're not going to nail the perfect system on the first try, but I think it'll be interesting.
It's going to be interesting. And it's interesting to see if they start to succeed, what the government then does.
Yeah.
Because then you can see, I could see the government, if they're just floundering and it's nonsense and they wait for it to fizzle out, that's one thing. But if they start succeeding and actually organizing, that's when you're going to start to see whether or not the government is actually okay with competition.
Right. I'm just wondering, since, they're kind of cut off from the outside world, but at the same time, like, they're still all using their cell phones. So, like,
they're tweeting away.
Who's paying their cell phone bills?
Right? Mom and dad, I guess. I don't know.
It would be interesting to talk to somebody down there. I know a couple guys who have went, so I don't know if you know Rod Weber. He's been down there. He's the guy that you remember the $150,000 banana on the wall with the duct tape?
Yeah.
He's the guy that after they took that down, some guy took it down and ate it, and they were like, oh, that's okay. He ate a $150,000 piece of art, but it's okay because that in itself was art. So Rod Weber goes down there with lipstick and he writes red lipstick. He writes, Epstein didn't kill himself, on the wall.
Oh, I saw that, and then they cleaned it up pretty damn quick.
Yeah, and he got kicked out for that. Actually, I think they kicked him out, and then they decided to arrest him afterwards or something. But he was like, "It's art." He's like, "They've already said it's okay for like people to come here and do art." That was really interesting, and he had a case on that in Florida, and I think it was dismissed.
It should be, because the guy stole the art and it was art. If I wrote on the wall, then me writing on the wall is art.
This was really interesting. When the police were arresting him, he's like, what are you arresting me for? What are you harassing me for? I don't know if they arrested him or not, but he's like, and they're like, because you're destroying the wall at this point, right? Just the wall. You're destroying the property. And he was like, no, I'm creating art. And I was like, that's a really like, that's a philosophical zinger right there.
right.
And you know, to that same point, like I saw some of the statues that have been destroyed, like in all these riots. And, like there was one where it was like, it was hands like this. And, I don't remember what the hands represented, but like what was it? The hands were like was it the police hands or like something like that? Like it was a monument to the police for helping the community or something like that. I don't know. I might have gotten that all wrong, but they took red paint and they dumped it in the palms of the hands, and it looked like blood like pouring out of the hands. And I was like, dude, they should totally just leave that like that. That's new art.
They just left it, right?
Yeah, it's like you've got blood on your hands. And I'm like, that's beautiful. And like, you know, what's interesting, because people are always talking about like getting rid of statues and all this other stuff, and some people are like, yeah, but you're erasing history, and some people are like, yeah, but that's a statue of a communist or you know, this other stuff. I'm like, okay, well, it is kind of history, but at the same time, if somebody's like, doesn't that make, so like, let's say you have a monument of some big slave owner that, you know, whatever, and we've got, you know, maybe Chris Columbus, right? We've got a monument to him, and it's like, oh yeah, well, we're not worshiping him, right? He's kind of a bad guy. So like somebody comes along and destroys the statue, couldn't we just leave that the destroyed statue there as like a monument to the revolution against that slave mentality that came up? And like, I don't know, I think that's like, it's interesting. It's just, but the world is just kind of like, it just is. It's like, if something changes, it's really not that big of a deal.
It's not. Not that to me, that's really what it is. I had this taking down the statues and everything. Like, I'm of the ilk where, man, we should have never put them statues up in the first place. That was an awful waste of taxpayer money.
Right.
I don't know if I'm really upset about this, because I don't care if the statues are there or not. I have books for history. You know, yeah, what I mean? We can write books, and you know what? History is written by he who wins, right? It's the victor that writes the history in the blood of the loser. So maybe we should re-examine a little bit of the history from time to time to make sure that it is as accurate as it could possibly be, because there is some validity to the fact that, yeah, he was worshipped at one time, and then we found out, well, maybe he probably shouldn't have been worshipped, and maybe we should change something a little bit, and maybe you take them and put them somewhere else in a place of about how history was incorrectly written and being corrected, and you have a museum about that or something. I don't know. These things are things that each locality should be taken care of. It's not something that should be a nationwide sweeping kind of ordeal, because again, the people in this area are different than the people in that area. They should make their decisions, and these people over here should make those decisions. And that's the beauty, right, of having 50 different little states.
And that's like that's interesting too, because you have like, and Kate, by the way, said that is, it was the hands of protect and serve. That was that statue. You have this, like, so people burn flags all the time, right? And especially libertarians will say, like, yeah, you know what? Like, flag worship is kind of a silly thing that we do. Like, what's really the big deal? But then, like, they also get to the point about property rights. Well, you know, as long as they're not burning your flag, right? And it's like, their flag might look exactly like your flag, but it's not yours. You didn't buy that flag. They didn't, you know, they didn't come to your house, take the flag off of your pole.
They steal your flag off of your flagpole in your house.
Exactly. And so in that same way, I mean, people put up flags, people personally put up statues. Actually, there was a guy, this made big news when I was living in LA a long time ago. There's a football player, and he got like, he just moved into like one of the nicer neighborhoods, like I think it was outside of Beverly Hills, and he got like 30 statues of David like lining around his front yard. And it's like, you know, so he's just all there with his, like, with his junk hanging out. And all the neighbors got really pissed off. Like, how could he do such a thing? And it turned into, like, this big thing that eventually, like, they tried to sue him to get rid of it. And he ended up keeping it. But it's funny. But it's like, the point is, like, people put up their own statues. right? Like they can build their own statues, but the stuff that the government puts up, just like you said, it's like they're stealing from us to put up a monument for somebody that we might not even have any respect for.
The government doesn't have money, and the government shouldn't have the ability to make these decisions on behalf of everybody. It's just not, it doesn't make sense. There's no logic behind why this one group of little people that won the popularity contest can take everybody's money and spend it on this little project, and half the people could care less that it exists. I go, it's illogical. It's just a mess. It's a complete mess.
Okay, look, I want to do this real quick because this is kind of funny. Okay, the president gets paid, what, $400,000 a year, right?
Yeah, approximately, right.
Okay, so if you divide that by 320, let's do, I think it's 350 now. 350 million, that's 0.1 cents per person per year to pay for his salary. Which sounds like not a whole lot of money, right? But then you consider, okay, we're giving the government, most of us, anywhere between 10 and 50, but some people are giving them millions of dollars every year. Where the fuck is all that money going? If like, I mean, a statue, if they build a new statue every year, that's 0.1 penny for us. For per person, that's nothing. That's peanuts. We should be able to afford that.
Right. That's why at the end of the day, when people are upset about them tearing down the statues, I'm like, I understand why you're upset to a degree. But at the same time, I know why they're upset to a degree. I really do think the best position for us to be in is the statue not existing, because then nobody can be upset. And then you, if that's who you like, can put something up in your house or in your backyard. And you can have that, and you can have that monument for yourself. That's the beauty of owning your own property and being able to have your own little safe space and do what you think makes best, as long as you leave your neighbor alone and let them do what they think is best, and nobody hurts each other.
Yeah, that's a nice explanation, a personal safe space. That's really what private property is, right? That's like castle doctrine.
That's it. Your private property is your safe space, and that's how it should be viewed. And if that's what you want in your safe space, then by all means, God love you, go do it. We don't need to put it in a public space where you're pissing off half the town.
Right. Yeah, right? Like everybody, you walk down the main street naked and everyone gets pissed off. Like, oh my God. But it's like, because leave that at home with your statues and your flags.
Exactly. You got your own safe space to walk around naked, bro. You don't gotta come walking naked down the street. I got kids out here. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Okay, I want to talk about this because we were having a fun talk about this before we started the show. Pineapple pizza. Because apparently that's not a big thing in New Jersey. They hate it out there.
There's plenty of people that'll do it, but if you order it, there's going to be somebody in the room that vocally chastises you for doing it because it's just a sin.
You say doing it like it's like shooting up heroin. Like, yeah,
I mean,
man.
I mean, to some people it is in New Jersey. I mean, you're really, it's like blasphemy. And then you put bacon with it. Some people put bacon with it and pineapple, and it's just I'm good, man. Like it that doesn't belong on the pizza. It's just, it's too sweet. It doesn't belong there. I'm sorry.
So this was a fun idea because like we talked about this and we're like, okay, the country is divided and a lot of the stuff we're divided on is total bullshit. But and especially in a world where like libertarians, we've been saying this for decades about how corrupt the police are, how corrupt the government is, how police are racist, all these other things, all these things that are going to happen. We've been talking about qualified immunity. We've been talking about, everything that they're talking about now. And it's like, why weren't you listening when we were saying it? I'm just reading the comment. And yeah, now everybody's commenting about pineapple pizza.
Of course they are.
They're like all silent and now it's like, oh, what? Now it's the pineapples. So like, okay, if everything's divisive, why don't we do this? Why don't we have like a nice protest where we go out And we have like, it can be almost like, you know, like a battleground where like we go out to the Capitol and you have the pro pineapple people on one side and the anti pineapple people on the other side. And like, they're just there, like, you know, like a civil war reenactment, like ready to charge at each other.
I think it'd be beautiful.
Yeah. And then you mentioned silly string and like,
yeah,
like water balloons. Like, oh man, like maybe this is what some of us need to get some of our anger and frustration out on, just like the fact that we do live in a society. I said it. We live in a society. We live in a society with other people that we might not always get along with. And I know that's frustrating and we don't always have an outlet for that frustration. So like, maybe this would be a fun time. And like, maybe even like, you know, those, what is it? Don't they give them to couples in like the counseling sessions, like their baseball bats that are like covered in foam? Just let people like fight it out with that kind of stuff.
Listen, we can let them fight it out. You can have water grenades. You can have silly string bombs. You can have all kinds of fun stuff that would just, it would be silly. And you can even have one group come in and pretend to be a mock police breaking it up with water balloons and stuff like that. It would really send home the message about how ridiculous some of the protests are, because
right.
I mean, let's be real, some of them are well justified. I mean, I did it. There's a lot of things that need to be protested, but there's a lot of contention that's just silly over some very small things. And like, it would be awesome if one group showed up, you know, begging the legislator for laws against pineapple on pizza, and then the pro pineapple people come in as a counter protest, and it just gets out of hand. And it would be a lot of fun to demonstrate and just to do that little bit of a Vermin Supreme style parody of the political process. You know, we could even get him involved. I'm sure he'd love to hang out.
Yeah, he'd be like the what do you call it? Like the ringleader or something. But like, I'm like, as we're talking about this, like, it also sounds really interesting because like, so I've always had this idea that like on 4th of July, instead of like going to the lake and cooking hot dogs and stuff, we should all go to like, you know, wherever it is, like maybe we set up like a facade of a state house and we all throw Molotov cocktails at it as like, you know, like a sentiment of like, no, we fought for freedom on this day against tyrants, and to like, to get us back in the mentality of like, when people come to take our rights away, we need to be able to resist and fight. I mean, like, imagine if somebody comes and puts a knife in your face. There's two ways you could be taught. One way is take everything, I'll call the police and they'll file a report. Or it's only a knife, I think I can take him, I'm going to fight for my life.
Right.
Those are the two mentalities. And when the government is, you know, it's because you're going to call the police, right? When the government is the one coming after you, what are you going to call? The government? Like, no, that option is off the table. So you need to fight to defend yourself. And if we don't know how to do that, and like, I mean, that's not something they teach you in school. Like, they don't teach you, they teach you like peaceful protest, which is like, okay, to a degree, but it's like, what happens when you're not being heard? And people get frustrated and they don't know. So they go and they burn down all these buildings, which is not an effect, especially those buildings didn't oppress you.
It's counterproductive. They're not striking at the root. They're just striking out in anger.
Right.
And it's sad to see, because you know why they're doing it. You understand why. So, listen, are there opportunists in the crowd taking advantage of the opportunity to do, you know, get over on the man for themselves, you know, by stealing stuff that they've never had? I'm sure. I get that. But, you know, there are people that are actively engaging in that, you know, they're doing it out of pain and out of suffrage, and they want to make sure that somebody hears them. You know, even Dr. King at the end of his life in 67, I think. So at the end of his life, he gave a speech where he said, you know what, I don't condone the violence, but I understand where it's coming from. And when you've been silenced for so long and nobody's listening, you know, you have, and I'm paraphrasing terribly, by the way, it's understandable how we could get to this point where there are riots and now it's their only chance to be heard, you know, and that's really, it's what it is. I don't want people stealing stuff out of the local Target or burning down the mom and pop shop down the street. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to see that. And that's not something we should expect people to be doing. And we shouldn't, it's not okay for people to be doing that. But you can be against people doing that, but then be empathetic to the cause of why they did that and what drove them to that place. Right. See, what happens is people are like, well, they should be punished. They should be punished. They should be punished. Okay, cool. If we catch one of the arsons, we'll punish that arson, that arsonist, right? And then, but let's stop. Let's not stop there, because so many people want to stop there. All they want to do is stop at arresting the people who are doing the damage and causing the property damage. And then they don't want to reflect on, all right, what led us to this place? What got us to the point of them feeling that that was the only way to be heard? You know what I mean? That's where criminal justice reform comes into play. That's where ending the drug war comes into play. That's where making sure that we're not throwing people in a jail cell when they have an addiction because they have other underlying issues going on around their lives, preventing them to get away from that addiction because they don't have the love and the compassion and the positive vibes coming through in their lives. That's where we have to, we've got to end qualified immunity. So you can't have people who might be racist be put in a position of power that allows them to express their racism by utilizing power against other people. If you strike at the core of the system and you remove the center of power, then it doesn't matter. A racist is a nasty asshole that we can all go punch in the face later on down the road, and nobody's going to bother him. But if you give him a center of power, well, now we have a problem. Racism without power is just not, it's disgusting, but it doesn't hurt anybody. Racism with power, that's the problem. And then that's what people mean when they say systemic racism. Because we have a system that enables people who are racist to play out and hurt other people based on their racist ideologies. And that's where the problem lies. There's always going to be a bigot. There's always going to be a jerk off. There's always going to be some guy who's in the corner or down the street who hates you for your beard or hates you for your hat or hates you for the color of your skin. We can do the best we can to educate them otherwise. And we can do the best we can to provide them examples of why it's wrong to be that way. But if they don't have the ability to get power, it's a moot point because they can't hurt you without power. And that's where we got to strip back this criminal justice system and prevent people from just writing laws to specifically target communities of people, as was done with the crack cocaine differences. When Reagan, right? Mm-hmm. They made the punishment for crack 10 times worse than the punishment for cocaine. Why did they do it? We all know why they did it.
Right.
Because in the minority community, crack was a problem, and only white people did cocaine at the time.
Well, yeah, but that was our man. I'm trying to remember my history on that because I know that was all seated in racism too. I mean, Nixon's whole thing, like there's an audio recording of them saying like,
yes,
yeah, it's like
that's the point though. If that power structure didn't exist where we could make some kind an ingestible product illegal and jailable for just ingesting it or using it. If you didn't have that ability, then the racists couldn't leverage it.
Right. But I think at the same time that also indicates that racism is like, I mean, that's really what you're saying anyway. Racism isn't the core problem, but it's almost like racism isn't even the problem at all. The problem is just that this power exists and it will be given to people, and it is given to people who can abuse it. And there's absolutely no check on that. And so it doesn't matter if it's racism. It doesn't matter if it's sexism or if it's, you know, just like somebody's got a badge and they have a real bad temper and they just like to beat people up, whatever race they are. Like, it doesn't matter. They have that power and we are powerless to do anything about it.
And we are. And, you know, listen, I wish the racists didn't exist. You know, I wish that, you know, I didn't have to worry, you know, when my wife goes out that, you know, she's going to get treated differently because she's not white. I don't want to have to worry about, you know, my daughter maybe getting, when she gets older, because she's not, you know, 100% white, that some kids in school, I don't want that stuff to exist. That's disgusting. It's abhorrent. And I honestly have no need for those people in this world, in my view. However, what I definitely don't need is there to be a power, a place for them to gain power. It's like, listen, you know, and a lot of times I always try to point this out to people. The Lord of the Rings. You got to throw the ring into the fire. Star Wars, the Force and the dark side. okay? When the power falls into the wrong hands, every movie and every story you ever says, keep the power out of the wrong hands. Keep this out of the wrong hands. Back to the Future. We can't let the wrong people get the time machine because then bad things will happen and then Biff ruins the world. It's always the case. It's always a matter of if the power structure didn't exist and we destroy the power structure, then the bad people can't hurt the good people. Because then the good people will worry, will be able to defend themselves against the bad people, because yeah. There won't be a monopoly on that force.
And I think what kind of adds insult to injury there is, as I like to say, taxes pay for killer cops. Like we're forced to participate in that on the side that we don't agree with. When anytime we're forced to pay a tax, and that money goes towards. It goes towards the police, which ultimately goes towards their unions, which also goes towards, it goes to the city, which pays for their legal defense. It pays the court judges who uphold qualified immunity. It goes to all these things. And even though it's 0.01 pennies per year that we have to pay, we have no ability to say, I don't support that. I'm not going to give you my penny. And you're not going to be employed.
They just tell you to vote.
Yeah.
They just tell you to vote. You're only active
vote with your vote with your dollars. Imagine if you could just say, yeah, we're not going to pay for that. We're not going to give you any money.
Then they would have to change the way they act. So if we had a voluntary system of taxation and we had voluntary and people and they had to earn their money. You know, one thing that Pete Roorman, I'm going to use him for an example. When he ran for governor, he called it a voluntary but compulsive tax, right? So basically, the way he explained it was, you had to give X amount of dollars, but you got to choose where those dollars went. You got to choose which department got how much money. If you had to give $10,000 and you wanted to give all $10,000 to the Department of Education, then you gave all $10,000 to the Department of Education. And then every department and every structure had to then lobby you for your money, which ultimately gave you the power to decide who can and can't get their money. Now, there would be plenty of people who would just evenly divide their money amongst every organization because they think all of the government is important. And then there's going to be people like, nah, man, the cops need all my money. And there's going to be people like, nah, the fire department needs all my money. There's going to be other people like, no, the sanitation department needs all my money. The streets are a mess. You know what I mean? Like, but then the police department will be like, hey, Mr. Berman, I noticed last year you didn't give us any of your taxes. I'd like to know why. What are some of your concerns? Like, they would actually have to go out to citizens and talk to them and find out what do we need to do different for you to support us more.
Yeah.
Because there would be a risk and there would be incentive. See, when we remove risk and incentive from the marketplace and government just picks and chooses winners and losers, well, the people ultimately lose every time.
Absolutely. Man.
Uh-oh. Is that me freezing or are you freezing?
No. Did I freeze?
For a second.
Oh, I'm in deep thought. That's some heavy stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately, I always like to use the analogy of a restaurant, right? You go to a restaurant. What restaurant are you going to go to if they treat you like shit and your food comes out cold every time and it tastes like crap? And, you know, who's going to keep going to that restaurant?
Nobody.
And so why are there, I mean, are there any restaurants out there like that? No. Sure. Have you been to a restaurant that has been like that? Maybe. And like, you know,
how long did they exist though?
Well, but this is the thing. Like a lot of people go to a restaurant. Oh yeah. I went there one time and it was terrible. Yeah. It might've been terrible that one time because maybe like the chef was like out sick and the manager was like trying to do everything. It's like, there's all kinds of like problems that go down in restaurants, but it's like, but yeah, if their food really is shit all the time, they're not going to be there very long, unless they're laundering money, of course. I know a couple of restaurants that did that, but they actually still had really good food, even though they didn't need to.
Maybe they actually enjoyed it. It was just their passion on the side, you know?
Yeah, who knows? yeah, it's like, that's just the way it works. And when it's the government and it's like, no, we've got a gun to your face, just give us everything that we want and we'll leave you alone. like they do in Chaz, then that's that. You have no say. They don't care anything about customer service or you know, quality
and, product and quality. Ultimately that's ultimately the perspective I want to bring to every decision that I can, you know, help the people of District 4 make. I want to be able to use that mentality of, hey, how do we make this work for the people, and how do we make sure that they're the ones pulling the strings? I don't want the lobbyists pulling the strings. I don't want the bureaucrats in D.C., the Congress, the congressional members in California or North Dakota or Washington or Oregon telling the people of District 4 how they're supposed to be living their lives. So, you know, that's my goal, is to come to the table and just say no, but with a very hardcore, hard-lined no, because I'm not going to go in saying, oh, well, I know I have to compromise because Nancy believes this way. So let me start off like where my compromise is. And then she stands off hard and it pulls me closer to her and nobody wins. No, I'm going to come in and I promise the people that I hope will eventually vote for me or want to follow me and be more along and get in, or somebody who's watching this who gets inspired to maybe run for office themselves, go in there hard-lined and say, no, this is what we demand. Because that's all the job of a House rep is. Your job is to be chief negotiator for your district. Your right. job is to negotiate for your district. There's nothing else. It's not your job to come up with a plan. You know, I don't need to have plans. People ask me, what's your plan for this? I don't have a plan for this. I know what I want the final outcome to be. My job is to go to the table and negotiate with the other 435 people. That's my job.
So, I mean, I really like that because you're... Okay, like a lot of people say, like, yeah, you have to go and you have to compromise and all this other stuff, which, no, compromise is for, like, you know, if you're in a relationship and, like, you know, something like that, right? Or whether it's a personal relationship, business relationship, compromise to get stuff done, right? But, like, it's something, like, when we talk about compromises in government, like, the compromise is, like, imagine like, you're with your wife, and you're like, okay, I want to go to this restaurant. Well, we went to your restaurant last week. Okay, I'll compromise. We'll go to your restaurant again, right? That's a compromise. When you're in Congress, and you're like, yeah, we want to steal this many millions of dollars from these people, and we want to invade this country over here, and they say, well, we'll let you steal this money, but as long as you put some of it towards schools and you invade the other country instead,
you're still stealing the money. Invading a country.
It's like, you do not, like, that is not a compromise. You do not, like, that would be like if, like, you know, going back to the relationship thing, it would be like if you said, well, we'll go to your restaurant, but only if you let me stab someone on the way home. Like, that's not right. That's not how a compromise.
The restaurant, but only if we skip out on the bill.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
because I can't afford that this week. So what we'll have to do is tax them by skipping out on the bill and just taking their food for free.
Right. We have to understand that, like, and this is what the Constitution does, right? The Constitution defines the bounds which, and, like, even though I don't agree with all the powers that it has, Congress is way outside of that. The government is way outside of that. And so whenever they go outside of that, they are breaking the law. The Constitution is the law of the land. They are breaking the law. It's much worse than when you made that turn without using your blinker and they gave you a $100 fine for it. It's much worse than that. And their idea of a compromise is, we'll find a law that we can break together. We'll find a way to steal from people that we can steal together and both benefit from it. That's what they see as a compromise. And that's absolute bullshit. That's not
it's garbage. It's pure garbage. It is what it is. And it's this it's you know, so I have people tell me, oh, well, if you win, you're eventually just going to become like the rest of them. I go, I have no incentive to be like the rest of them. I'm not doing it for any other reason of this is what I believe. Like, I think people get that when they talk to me, because they know it's like a true passion. This isn't fake. I'm authentic. This is me. It's just how I talk to my friends every day. Like, this is normal. It's not, I don't care about anything other than making sure that people can live their lives. And as long as they're not hurting other people, do whatever the heck they feel they need to do to provide for themselves and their family and enjoy their lives. You know, the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness, right? Those three things. Well, if somebody is constantly, nope, can't go that way. Nope, 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 can't go that way. Nope, nope. Are you really, is it real? Is it real? Because I'm not so sure it is right now. And I want to make sure that there's at least one voice in the state of New Jersey that's saying, no, that's not right, and this is why.
Absolutely. All right, man. Before we wrap this up, we've got your website on the screen here, but you want to give us your website. Give us what can people do to help you out? Donate. What do you need?
Right now, that's really what I need. I need everybody to go check out the website. It's www.runrufo2020.com. It's going to redirect you to 2018. It's okay. It's the right place when you get there. Okay. I just not the most tech
savvy. Holy shit. I just traveled back in time.
Yeah. Hey, talk about back to the future. I didn't know I was in a DeLorean. I don't really understand how I did what I did, and I did it. I apologize to everybody who gets confused, but I did it myself. I have my people working on other things because the other things like organizing my signature petition, my petition for signatures on my petitions, getting out to events and door knocking and interviews like this with you are far more important to me right now at the moment. But go there, hit the donate button, because right now what we need to do, we have the signatures we need to get on the ballot. I'm going to be on the ballot. My goal right now with signatures is to turn in 3 times the amount needed to try and make a statement, to try and get the press coverage, to get people like, oh no, nope, no, no, no. Mike's for real this time. He's not just doing it like he did in 2018. He's coming for blood, and he's got support now. And that's the message. So, but what I do need, and to be able to do that, is I need to be able to door knock. Okay. And in order to door knock and have this and have an advantage in this race, I need to hit 100,000 doors. If I can hit 100,000 doors, I can exceed all expectations and have the greatest third party run in the history of the state of New Jersey when it comes to the U.S. House seat. In order to do that, I'm going to have to pay people. Unfortunately, when it comes to volunteers, I'm not going to be able to get the volunteers to door knock 100,000 doors in 2 months. As much as I'd love and I trust all of my friends to do it, it's not possible. I need to pay people. So if you can, please, if you're listening, donate, help us out. Door knocking is the key. Organizations like YAL have shown that it works, and that is the way for us to get the message out, and that is the way that I'm going to be able to have an impact on this race. What is my win? My win is 5%. 5% is more than any third-party candidate has ever gotten. But if we touch 100,000 doors, we might actually have a damn shot at this thing, because we only need maybe 100,000 votes. So if we could touch 100,000 doors and we talk to 50,000 people and they all tell one friend, we got the votes we need to win this race and throw the two-party system into a tizzy, because there's a libertarian in Congress now. We can talk about the things that he's doing. We can show how that could possibly be somebody in your rep in your district that's working. So I just need that. That's the help that I need. If there's anybody out there, it's a graphic designer, wants to offer me some help with designing some logos and some stuff, that'd be great too. Whatever it is you think you can do, please feel free to reach out to me at that website. You can hit all my social media. I have Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm an old millennial, so I don't have Snapchat or any of those other cool things, but it's all at Rufo, the number 4, Congress. Twitter is where I'm most active. I'm very easy to reach there. Reach out to me. Let me know how you can help. And I'm here. Let's rock and roll, and let's make this the most successful congressional race, I guess, outside of Justin Amash's. Let's be more successful than Justin Amash. Let's assume he doesn't win and I do. Whatever. Let's be the most successful libertarian congressional race in the country, because I really believe we can do that here in New Jersey.
And I want to add this because I think this is really important, and it's missed by a lot of people. You're talking about raising money and knocking on 100,000 doors. It doesn't matter if you win, if you're knocking on $100,000 doors, because what's happening is, I mean, just like anybody watching this podcast, I know I reach a lot of people with my campaign. If you're watching right now, you might not have been a libertarian or an anarchist or an ANCAP or whatever you are. You might not have been that the first time you heard of me, but you are now. That's because I went knocking on your door virtually, right? And so it, like, this is, Arvin says it all the time. If we got rid of the government today, the culture that created that government is just going to create another one just like it. We need to change the culture. And that happens by knocking on doors, reaching people, and getting this message out. So even, I know there's a lot of naysayers out there, libertarians don't win elections. Doesn't matter. Give the guy some money. Let's knock on some doors. Let's turn more people into libertarians, because in a few years, it all adds up.
Yes, and it's all going to add up. And I really, again, this too is going to be phenomenal. And I appreciate you giving us the ability to have this platform. One of my other goals is to have more content available in the digital realm than either the Republican or the Democrat, because going into this Corona thing, if there's another surge, if public appearances aren't possible, well, naturally, I'm going to dominate the Google algorithms by having the most video content possible on my website. And when you Google 2020 congressional race in New Jersey CD district in New Jersey CD4, I'm going to be at the top of the list. I'm going to be at the top of the page because of things like this. So I really do appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, it's been awesome. I'll see you guys next time. Taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft. Thank you.